Welcome back to Coast AM. I am Dave Schrader. I want to thank you all for spending your evening with me. I'll be back hosting next Sunday night, and I hope you'll join me again that night here on Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, we're speaking with John Cameron. He is an author of the book, It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. You can check out more information about this case at coldcasecameron.com. That's coldcasecameron.com. We've mentioned it throughout the show, but we haven't directly addressed it, I guess. Chandra Levy is one of the cases that that you touch upon. Do you really believe that Edwards had a hand in her death as well?
Yeah, Chandra was from Modesto, California, and at the time of her death, she was actually doing an internship for the Bureau of Prisons and was given the responsibility to actually be the press release person for the pending execution of Timothy McVeigh. And Chandra disappeared May of 2001, and Timothy McVeigh was going to be executed June of 2001. And that's one reason why he targeted Chandra to kill was she was from Modesto, which is the area of California that he targeted to kill after they executed that innocent man in 56. She was also a very similar replica of Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, in looks and hair and age and everything. And her case actually was targeted to go after Congressman Gary Condit, and that's what happened in that case. He apparently admitted to having an affair with her when she disappeared, and everybody thought that she was, or that he was the one that killed her. And then what happened that year, 9/11 happened, and Chandra Levy case just kind of was taken right out of the news. So his crime of recognition with Chandra Levy was no longer in the news after 9/11 happened. So 7 days after 9/11 happened, he anthraxed the National Enquirer down in Florida and several other medias along the East Coast and Congress. And the anthrax letters can be seen online, and some of them are in my book. But he created another crime of recognition after 9/11 because Chandra Levy was no longer in the news. And 9/11 killed 3,000 people or more. And by anthraxing the East Coast of the United States, he was going to take out a lot more. So we really don't know how many he may have killed with the anthrax, but we do know that five died in that attack, and that the anthrax was spread throughout the East Coast, throughout the mail rooms of major news organizations and Congress.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll open up phone lines. So if you have points, questions you'd like to chime in with, many people calling out some of these claims as nothing but wild conjecture. Tammy Valentine in the chat room, one of those people. This is your chance to address the author and the researcher, the investigator, the detective himself behind this book. It's me, Edward Wayne Edwards, a serial killer you never heard of. John Cameron takes your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. We're back with Coast to Coast AM. This evening we've been talking about claims of what could be the most prolific, proficient, and profound serial killer in United States history. We're talking about Edward Wayne Edwards. Now, whether you believe that this man is responsible for all of the deaths that we've discussed this evening, there's no denying this man was evil and was involved in many crimes he admitted to, was imprisoned for, and was eventually found guilty for, and was going to be put to death. We're going to talk now with our listeners, give you a chance to talk to our guest, John Cameron. Remember, we expect respect with all of our calls. It's fine to have opposing views and have an interest in trying to get to the bottom of this, but please, let's remain respectful. Let's go to the calls. Wild card, line four, John in Long Beach, California. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Thank you. I just wanted to run a couple things by your guest. There was in People magazine recently, there's a guy that's come forward that says that his a strange father, and he had some compelling evidence, was the Zodiac killer. You might want to read it. I don't want to go into too much detail and take up too much time, but he had some compelling. The guy had been in prison. He got out in 1965, and he was bitter because this guy's mother was 15 years old when he was born. The guy went to prison for statutory, and then he came out of prison in 66, according to him, and he has evidence that he's the Zodiac killer. And the two other things, the guy with the anthrax, didn't the guy commit suicide when they were closing in on him and the anthrax thing? And Wayne Williams, they seem to have had quite a bit of evidence against him, and the killing stopped the minute that they arrested him. And if Edwards was this uncontrollable killer that you talk about and had a vendetta, he would have kept going, wouldn't he, just to taunt him? And those are my questions. Thank you. I'll listen off the air.
Thank you for calling in, John.
I'll go ahead and I'll start with the last question regarding the anthrax attacks. The man that killed himself, Dr. Ivins, killed himself July 27th, 2008, after the FBI had been investigating him for about 3 years. But prior to that man, there was another Dr. Hatfield that was also targeted by the FBI as the anthrax killer, and that man ended up getting paid about $4.5 million for the false accusations. Dr. Ivins ended up overdosing in Tylenol on July 27th, 2008, in his bathtub with no suicide note. So he was definitely mentally unstable, and they suspected he was the anthrax killer, but they never charged him, but then they basically said he was after he killed himself. In regards to the Most Dangerous Animal book, the book recently put out by Gary Stewart, who claims that his father was the Zodiac killer, I read that book. And I would just say you could compare my book to his book and make your own decisions based on the evidence there. I know you had a second question there. I can't recall what it was, though.
I apologize, too. I'm being inundated with questions, so I didn't follow on that one as well. Tammy Valentine in the chat room says, Henry Lee Lucas made very similar claims as Edwards in the 1980s. He had law enforcement thinking he killed hundreds of people based on evidence, like where he was at the time and purportedly knowing details about unsolved crimes that were never released. Turns out most of them were lies. What Tammy wants to know is there any DNA or physical evidence in any of these high-profile cases that can effectively link Edwards to these cases?
Well, that's something that law enforcement will have to do and send the evidence in on some of these old cases. A lot of times in these old cases, the evidence might be contaminated and sat in the evidence room for 20, 30, 40 years and have been touched by everybody. So that's really going to be up to law enforcement to send in their DNA, their evidence, their clothing, and all of that to get DNA off of those cases. But in regards to Henry Lucas and Otis Toole, actually, from 1983 to 1986, pulled that hoax on investigators from Florida, Texas, and Pennsylvania. And what's interesting about that is they were claiming to be the most prolific serial killers. Well, at that same time, 1983 to 86, Edwards was in Pennsylvania. And investigators from Pennsylvania, and investigators from Texas, and investigators from Florida were investigating Lucas, Toole, and Edwards' claims that he had information on murder. So during the same period of time that Toole and Lucas were claiming they were the most prolific serial killers and informing the police, so was Edwards.
Let's grab a quick email here before we grab another phone call. It says, Dear Dave, I love Coast to Coast. And Mr. Cameron seems a sincere and honest man, but it's a hard pill to swallow that Edwards could do the Black Dahlia at age 13, even if he did animals prior to that. And then why not cut off JonBenet Ramsey's head? Criminals are crafty, keen, and manipulative. I agree his website is intriguing, but without more evidence, it boggles common sense that this monster could be smarter than everyone involved in so many notorious crimes. Please ask Mr. Cameron what he thinks of Steve Hodell, the son of George Hodell, who we mentioned tonight, who suggests that Black Dahlia's murder was connected to the murder and dismemberment of 6-year-old Suzanne Dengen in Chicago. Also, the psychology of someone who crosses all racial, gender, age, and variety of MO is what makes this so unbelievable. And anthrax? This is specialized knowledge and access to do that. I believe in UFOs and aliens and Bigfoot, but I'm not sure about Ed Edwards. Many thanks, and that's from Jill in Fresno, California. Let's talk about that. I mean, you've got so many different crimes that are easy, again, superficially to say are connected because they're unsolved. And criminals can be crafty and manipulative. They play a lot of games. You know, first of all, what do you make of Steve Hodell and his story, believing that his father was, in fact, the Black Dahlia murderer, and the fact that his father, I believe, ran off to Manila when the heat got too hot for him. And within a year, an identical copycat murder occurred just down the street from his house, within a mile of the Black Dahlia murder, right in the same town where George Hodel ended up. I mean, that's a pretty uncanny coincidence as well. I think you'd agree.
Yeah, and Steve Hodel's a very good investigator. I actually read that book, and I felt he did a good job, and I really enjoyed the way he connected the two cases, the Black Dahlia and Suzanne Dignan from 1946. It's just that sometimes you get the right guy and the evidence all falls into place, and you don't have to ignore other evidence that suggests they didn't do it. Edwards was a letter writer his whole life, as was the Zodiac Killer, as was the Jomeneh ransom note writer, as was the Suzanne Dignan 1946 ransom note writer. He had placed all the evidence out there to be followed, and it led right to the Black Dahlia and the Suzanne Dignan murder, just like Steve Hodel thought they were related. They were related. But did his father kill Suzanne Dignan? And did his father kill the Black Dahlia? And did his father do the Zodiac? And then did his father do the Atlanta child killings and all of that? And did his father send the letters from the Zodiac in 2008? No. People had to ignore evidence that has always been out there, that the Zodiac killer has always been alive up until his death in 2011. But they had to ignore that evidence when their suspect didn't fit that evidence. And so in this case, you can go on my website and you're going to think I'm crazy. But if you read the book and then go on the website, I think it'll give you a different picture. That was the purpose of the website, was for people to read the book, then go on the website, and let's help divulge the rest of the murders this man did, because there's many more.
So you're using that as kind of an addendum to the book for people to continue researching and getting more information.
Yeah, that website took about a year to put together. That timeline of Edward's life was incredibly exhaustive, and yeah, that's out there because there are many other murders that can stop the waste of resources that's going on right now, because Edwards always directed the evidence towards anybody but him. So there's always suspects in these cases, and there's always evidence and letters that direct people that way. But that was on purpose, and that's what he did his whole life. I mean, the man didn't get caught for murder till he was 76, and he was a sadomasochist when he was 11. He was killing his whole life.
Let's take a call then. East of the Rockies, Leslie in North Carolina. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest, do you know if this horrible man, Edwards, I forget his middle name, actually ever did any crime in Oakland County, Michigan? We had five boys killed unsolved in Michigan still to this day. It had something to do. Everyone said something about a yellow Pinto or a yellow Pacer back in the day. It was like 1975 to 7 or 74 to 75, 76. I was in high school. It was a horrible thing. Everyone was afraid in our whole Oakland County. And the thing is, it all went back to a Catholic priest. And that man did not kill these boys because he was someplace else when all these boys, whenever they found their bodies. I don't know.
Well, what do you, let's let him answer on that. We've got to go to commercial here in a minute. But what do you make of that? Do you know of him being in that area at that time?
Yes, in fact, he was. And 1975 to 77 were the Oakland County child murders, and they were in Michigan, just east of Detroit. Edwards had ties to Michigan his entire life. He had been there as a young child running away. He also targeted killings there, killing an entire family of six in 1968 there. But John Ramsey was also from Michigan, and the Ramseys were actually headed to Michigan that morning they found JonBenet. Edwards would always tie his crimes to specific states where he killed and someone else got accused. And in the Oakland child murders, a priest was being accused of being the Oakland child killings, and that's exactly how it was designed, because Edwards is a Satanist, and if he can get a Catholic or a Christian convicted or accused and get them to either kill themselves or whatever, then he's succeeded, and that's exactly what he would do everywhere. but he had lots of ties to Michigan. I have him preaching back in the 70s that he's reformed, and then he's killing the kids on the couple in 1977 in Ohio. He's preaching in Michigan that he's reformed, and then he's in Ohio the next week, and he's killing couples. So he was never reformed, and he had lots of ties to Michigan.
How do you connect him to the JonBenet Ramsey case?
Well, originally, you know, you got to start at the beginning of this investigation. Is once that we identified him as the Zodiac killer, the Zodiac always signed with the Zodiac cross and circle. Not always, but for the most part, his letters were signed by the cross, the Zodiac cross and circle. The JonBenet Ramsey ransom note is signed by the cross. Victory SBTC. It meant victory, which is a Christian phrase, signed by the cross, the Zodiac cross and circle. That was the first clue that Edwards may have killed JonBenet, but that wasn't enough. I went out and spoke to Ed's family in 2010 and found out that he, in fact, had been hiding out in 1996 in Brighton, Colorado, when JonBenet was killed. And Edwards was never around on Christmas or Easter because he was a Satanist. His family were Christian, but he was not around on Christian holidays. And so once I had that more information, it was a ransom note. It's a three-page puzzle. And it's basically Ed Edwards' life, tying it to the Zodiac killer, tying it to his book. He actually mentions the word attaché in the JonBenet ransom note. Well, he's holding the attaché on the front of his book, Metamorphosis of a Criminal. He's holding it in his hand as the good guy. When he speaks of JonBenet and the two people watching over her in the ransom note, he's the two people. He's the good guy and he's the bad guy, and they're both on the front of his book. That whole ransom note was a complete parable of Edwards' life, and when I broke it down, as I do in the book, you'll see it.
All right. With the JonBenet Ramsey case, though, there was something interesting about the tie-in of when the murder occurred and what JonBenet Ramsey herself had said about a visitation from Santa Claus.
Yeah, and that's very important because she had told a friend 3 days before her death that she was getting a special visit from Santa Claus on Christmas Day. And the friend's mother overheard that and straightened out JonBenet and said, "Oh, no, Santa comes on Christmas Eve." And JonBenet said, "No, no, my Santa's coming Christmas night." And when you go back to Ed Edwards in the West Memphis 3 Paradise Lost video, that he's standing behind those little kids' victims, he is portraying Santa Claus in that video. And that's exactly who he was when he killed JonBenet. She let him into the house just like Suzanne Dignan let him into the house in 1946. Somebody fed her pineapple at the counter before her death, and her parents did not. And that has always been a problem with police. They couldn't figure out who had. And it's the kid who feeds Santa Claus. It was Santa Claus that got into that house, laid her out ritualistically in the basement, just like Suzanne Dignan, covered her with a white blanket, stamped funny patterns on her body, rubbed DNA on her. It was a complete ritualistic killing on Christmas by a Satanist.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. Phone lines are open if you'd like to be a part of it. West of the Rockies, John in Montana will be next. Wild Card 2, Robert in California. You can be a part of the show and talk directly with our guests this evening as well. John Cameron stays with us for the remainder of the show, answering your phone calls. Check out his website, coldcasecameron.com, for more information and to order your copy of the book. John Cameron, our guest this evening. He's the author and researcher and detective behind the book, It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the Serial Killer You Never Heard Of. What year was Edwards born?
1933.
All right, 1933. I mentioned that because I've received numerous emails about the famous torso killers. And I thought he would be much too young. He'd have been about 4 or 5 years old during those murders. And you don't have any connection tying him or anybody that he's surrounded with to those cases, do you?
Well, that actually explains his entire upbringing. The Cleveland torso murders happened 1933 to 1938, and someone was kidnapping men and women, cutting them in pieces and laying them out in public. Those first 5 years, 1933 to 38, were Edwards' first 5 years of growing up in Cleveland. So that was all over the press, the Cleveland torso murders, and he would mimic them later on in life.
Let's we'll continue taking calls. West of the Rockies, John in Montana. Welcome to Coast. What's your question?
Yeah, hello. Dave and John, I want to thank you both for the work you do to get the truth. And John, thanks on behalf of the people in Montana for you and the Great Falls Police Department for getting Bar-Jonah and Silva out of commission. Bar-Jonah, who died in prison, and Silva, who's serving almost 100 years in New Mexico. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
What I'm calling about, thank you. So calling about the thing in Great Falls, I was in Great Falls in 2006, and the Tribune was running a 50-year series of stories on it. I remember seeing a photograph of the car. I guess it was a 40s model under some cottonwoods, River Drive, right down there downtown. So, but I remember, I was trying to remember all I could about what I'd read. There seemed to be some smoky story buried in there about some convict that claimed he did it. And he referred to the man who apparently was an airman at Malmstrom Air Force Base as Propeller Head. He got that Propeller Head. And I was just wondering if you remember seeing those accounts, or if there was anything referred to by Edwards or anybody else.
Well, when you're referring to the Lovers Lane murder on January 2nd, 1956 here in Great Falls, Edwards was hiding out here at that time. There was a lot of pranks called in after that investigation. There was a lot of misdirection of the evidence to go after others, and there was a specific airman that was targeted. They never did make an arrest in that case. Later on in life, they did do a movie. The sheriff's office went on a show and claimed that they may know who did that murder, but there was never any definitive proof. And so that murder remained unsolved until 2010 when I confronted Edwards. But, yeah, there was a direction by the killer to direct the evidence towards a military person, and that's what Edwards did his whole life. He targeted military people to destroy either them or their kids.
All right. Thank you for calling in. Here's an email from Greg. He says, listening to Coast, I love tonight's show. I thought it's ironic. I just finished watching Zodiac, and this movie made a good case for a man named Lee as the Zodiac. Has Mr. Cameron's evidence changed the San Francisco Police Department and other agencies involved on the Zodiac killer? Do you know if the new book that's come out, or even your book, has helped them to try to reexamine it, or are they pulling an ostrich and just keeping their head buried in the sand and leaving things alone?
They're leaving things alone, and they have since 2010, since I began this. There's not an agency that I can name that really bothered to do anything about this information. That's why I knew I needed to write the book and finish it so the information could be there forever and give it to them. What they choose to do with it, they choose to do with it, but I know that they have chosen not to even follow up on whether it be my book or the many other My Father Was the Zodiac books. It's just the way it is now.
Yeah, I got an email here from Kathy. She says, in the JonBenet Ramsey case, there were several ransom letters laying around that looked like they were written in a child's handwriting. Could you please ask if Edwards might have been setting up the brother? Thank you so much. And that's from Kathy.
That's exactly what he was trying to do. And in fact, an anonymous letter was sent to the Boulder police January 27th, 1997. And it was sent from Shreveport, Louisiana during the Miss America pageant. And as you know, JonBenet was involved in those pageants, and so was her mother. That letter directed the police to go after someone within the family for molesting JonBenet. The author signed it anonymously. The police now refused to release the letter, but they were begging for someone to come forward in 97 to identify the author of that letter. The author of that letter is going to be Ed Edwards, and I've been trying to get the Boulder police to release that letter since 2010, but they won't.
All right, let's grab one more call before we go to break. Wildcard line two. Robert in California, you're on Coast to Coast AM.
Is this John?
Yes.
John, yeah. The last question about the Zodiac, Arthur Lee Allen, I read it. I'm here in Southern California. I was really interested, especially in the Zodiac killings, but also the Dahlia, to some degree, Chandra Levy, and also JonBenet. I had a feeling it was a real short chance that the Zodiac was involved with JonBenet, even though my logic told me differently. But I did believe, because of the letter and everything, that somehow a Zodiac type was involved with that. The Dahlia one's hard to connect because of the age situation. I guess I'd always thought in my mind that Dahlia was just, you know, the guy was probably dead by now. It was sold in 47, but you make a pretty good case. Also, I wanted to talk about, I had a couple other questions, plus I wanted to talk about an experience I had myself. I worked as a night auditor here in Los Angeles in 1990-91 at a hotel. It was a small hotel. A guy kept coming in. I was the weekend auditor. I'd look at his name. He was really unusual. He wore his hair in a Prince Valiant hairdo. I know the Zodiac liked the Beatles. It was in the 90s after the Beatles craze. They were still popular, but it wasn't as wild as it had been. He came in there. He was really strange. He was a loner, though. Looked tough. He was big, big guy. I mean, the guy had big shoulders. His body was big. He was somewhere between 5'10 to 6'1", I would guess. His face, he had a big nose. He could have been wearing a disguise. His face had lines through it. Like, I thought he might have been a military guy. He might have been injured in combat or something, but he seemed really cold. He spoke in a monotone, and there was one recording of the Zodiac, only one I think they had on record, and he did speak in a monotone. The guy also wore bifocals and looked, I know the Zodiac supposedly had bifocals. He snapped what I thought was a picture of me. I thought he might have been a CIA. My mind was running wild with me because we got in a little confrontation. It was my first night on the job, and he snapped. I saw the glass go down like some special thing, and it looked like it clicked. I heard a click like it. I thought maybe it's a camera. He also carried paper bags, had extremely big hands, and the size of the guy, the body and the hairdo, I was watching the Robert Stack show, not America's Most Wanted, but I can't remember the name of it. Unsolved Mysteries. There was a girl going through the forest somewhere up near Oregon, California. She was hitchhiking. She was offered a ride. She was thrown down the hill, strangled, thrown down the hill, left for dead. And they thought it might be the Green River Killer. The guy looked at, but I thought the guy was the Zodiac. One fellow, the earlier night auditor, the earlier guy that worked in the day said, "This guy's the Green River Killer." I said, "I don't know, but I think he's the Zodiac because he talks in a monotone." I said, "He talks in a monotone. And, he's got those eyes like the picture. He wore thick glasses. They were extremely thick. He had eyes that could see almost right through you. It looked like he could see right through you." I don't know if the guy was the Zodiac, but, you've made a pretty good case. And I don't know if the Zodiac was connected to any of the Green River killings at all. But it seems logical that he might have, he could have gone up there, and because of the random nature of it, that he somehow got involved with it. And it was
Robert, thank you for the question. What do you make of that, John? Do you think that there's any tie to that?
It's possible. Edwards always competed with other serial killers. Once the other serial killers were identified in the newspapers, he would go to those areas where they were killing and create a killing that would be somewhat similar, but maybe a little bit different, just to confuse police and leave them wondering. And in regards to the Black Dahlia and Ed Edwards only being 13, I think all you have to really do is go on my website or in my book, and you'll see a picture of Ed Edwards standing with Elizabeth Short in a photo booth just before her death. And you will see that the boy that was with her before that picture is snapped is just that, a boy. But Edwards was about a 16-year-old looking kid when he was 13. He was pretty mature, but you'll see the picture on my website or in the book.
We're going to take our final break. We'll come back and continue taking your calls. First-time caller line, Chuck in Kentucky. You're up next on Coast to Coast AM. Discussing the prolific career of serial killer Edward Wayne Edwards this evening. John Cameron, our guest this evening. Here's an email from James. He says, "This makes all law enforcement look like boobs if this tale is true." And Austin wants to know, is it just about the cops not wanting to look bad, or are there other reasons for not wanting to look at new evidence?
In each case that I confronted the police with and gave them information on, it was somebody else was convicted, and they were convicted by a jury. And I would hear this over and over again: "Well, he was legally convicted by a jury," and then they would just do nothing. It's a shame. There's many people. There's 9 people in prison right now that are innocent that were set up by this man. The longest being Wayne Williams, serving 33 years. The only way this is going to get out is for me to release this book and for people to start discussing what has occurred here. His whole purpose was to do this, and he succeeded for 66 years.
JT wants to know if your book is going to be available as a Kindle book.
Yeah, it will be eventually. Right now, it's just hardcover. This book was a project of a lot of people from Great Falls here that were great, and it was very difficult. Not a book writer, but it's right now it's available on hardcover only on Amazon. It's available on my website. But yes, I'm going to be doing a Kindle version of it shortly.
And Dynalo brings up a great question. What did Edwards do to support himself during the 66-year crime spree?
Murder, fraud, insurance fraud, collect rewards on bodies that he kidnapped and hid and then planted. He made money on murder, and he had conspirators in the insurance fraud, life insurance industry. He made $250,000 the year that JonBenet was killed, and he used that money to kill until his capture in 2009, and he didn't spend a dime of it on his family.
Let's grab first-time caller line Chuck in Kentucky. Thank you for hanging in with us, Chuck. What's your question?
I just want to tell John he's sure done an amazing job investigating all this stuff. It's really a heck of a story. But I was going to ask him. I was going to ask him about why would these police departments withhold evidence if they wanted to solve these problems, you know? And he did say that he connected him with the three young boys that was killed in Memphis, right?
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's unbelievable, man. I tell you, these people. Now he pretty much destroyed a lot of people's lives, and then did all them murders too.
Well, Chuck, that's exactly the case,
right. And, you know, not only is he doing it in murder, but he's also doing it in false prosecutions. And once those men are convicted, the police do not want to open up an investigation on their own murder if it ended up being false. It's a shame, but they should, and they should just stand up and admit that we made a mistake. The evidence was always directed to go after the innocent person, so the evidence looked like they were right. But they were always wrong on his cases because it was planted and it was meant to do that.
And in the West Memphis 3 case, Chuck, the other thing to remember is they've cut a deal. And right now, the deal basically says that all three of the men involved, Damian Eccles, Jesse Miskelly, and Jason Baldwin, all agree to some form of guilt without being guilty. And to everybody, this case is closed. If they, in fact, do go and prove that Ed Edwards did this, that would open up legal proceedings that would allow those three that were convicted and dealing with what they had to deal with for 20 years in prison would allow them to go after the court systems for legal issues and for finances for being wrongly imprisoned, because that would then truly kind of eradicate the current claim that they have in. Let's go to Wildcard 3. Carol in California, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Hi, thank you so much. Live in Modesto, and of course I was here when Chandra Levy death occurred, and also Scott Peterson's case. And I've met the Levy family, and I knew Congressman Gary Condit's family very well. And incidentally, as you probably know, Chandra Levy's death is still technically unsolved because the man that was convicted, his case is on appeal now. So that may still be unsolved. There was a Modesto woman a number of years ago when Zodiac first made headlines. She was coming back from San Francisco to Modesto late one night, and she thought she had car trouble. And she parked by the side of the road, and a strange man who had been following her came up and asked if she needed help. And she said that she was fine, and she said she felt really creeped out by the man, and she took off. Now, that case, that she may be one of the few that would be able to identify who you think is the actual Zodiac. Now, I have a question and then one suggestion. Have you read that book that was self-published by that California Highway Patrolman? He's retired.
Yes, I actually spoke with Landon. Is that, I think it was his name? Is that it? Landon Rafferty or something like that. He's a high patrolman from California that just wrote a book last year.
And he concluded that it was someone that he already knew from cruising, from patrolling in that area in Northern California. He thought it was a man from Vallejo who also was a member of the Sierra Club and some other things going on.
Yeah, that was Lyndon Lafferty. That was his name. He did write a book. But in regards to the woman you're talking about that was terrorized by the Zodiac, her name was Kathleen Johns, and she was actually pregnant. And Edwards terrorized her and then let her go, but then torched her car. And Edwards would let some victims survive so they could describe him, because that's what he loved to get off on, was that somebody could actually describe them, and he still wouldn't be identified. And he did that throughout his life.
Thank you very much for listening and giving us a call and being a part of the show with us this evening. We're wrapping up here last few minutes together. The book is available. It's out. You can find it on Amazon.com. You can also find it directly on John Cameron's website, coldcasecameron.com. Very detailed and rich website full of information for you to peruse. But pick up the book, read the book, then go use the website as an addendum to follow along. What do you really hope people get from this book? Why did you put so much time and effort into this one book?
Once I realized that the police weren't going to do an investigation on Edwards in 2010 and 2011, I knew that I had to put the information out in public if it was ever going to get out, because it would have never gotten out. And so that's why I wrote the book. But the book is more of a police investigation style, with the evidence laid out and with the progression of his life. And what I hope to do is get the innocent men out of prison, get the innocent people accused, such as John and Patsy Ramsey. Let's forgive for what we've done. We've destroyed people in this country by false accusations, and that's what this man thrived off of. And that was the whole purpose of his murders, was to create exactly that. And it did create it, and we're continuing to do it today. And so the purpose of my book is to hopefully we can expose this, get Wayne Williams, the Atlanta child killer, out of prison. He's the longest serving one. But there's Stobert Holt in Lakeland, Florida, for killing Robert Wiles. There's Father Gerald Robinson in Toledo, Ohio, set up for killing a nun on Easter. They're all listed in the back of my book, and they're all on my website also. But we just need to get those men out.
Well, thank you for the work you've done, John. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Remarkable story of Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. Again, check out coldcasecameron.com. I want to thank all of the callers for giving us a call. I'm sorry we couldn't get to Rachel, Pete, and Randy for the end of the show, but thank you for listening and being a part of the show with us. Special thanks to Trish, our screener, Brian, producing this evening, my engineer, Tim Dennis, right here in Minnesota. Of course, Lisa Lyon and George Norrie. I'll be back with you next Sunday. Thank you for tuning in and listening to Coast to Coast AM.